ورحمة الله وبركاته. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله. والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء وسيد المرسلين وشفيع المذنبين سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم محمد. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد. والصلاة والسلام على أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المظلومين المنتجبين لا سيما مولانا وسيدي صاحب الأصل والزمان روحي وأرواح العالمين له الفداء وأجل الله تعالى فرجه الشريف ولعنة دائمة على أعدائهم ومنكر فضائلهم إلى الآن إلى قيام يوم الدين. أما بعد، رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي. For the hastening of the return of our 12th Imam, Imam al-Sahib al-Asri al-Zaman, one salawat upon Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. Wow. One more salawat upon Muhammad and Ali Muhammad, please. Wow. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. What a difference 24 hours makes. Just, I think last night we were here and the hall was draped in black. And obviously, with a new day comes new events within our calendar. And that is just the way the world works. As we know, Allah tells us even in the Quran that days come and go, days change. And nothing hopefully stays the same. Nothing remains stagnant. And obviously, not only does Islam continue to prosper and grow, but hopefully also we have been prospering and growing over this past 2 months and 8 days, where we were commemorating not only the tragedy of Karbala, but also all of the other events that we have been marking over these past few months. And let me begin by first off extending our congratulations to all of us here tonight, and obviously to our awaited Savior and our Master, Imam al-Hujjah, Ajalallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. As we gather tonight on this event, which is known as Eid al-Zahra, and it's known with different names in different communities, and it's probably celebrated for a lot of different reasons in different communities. Hopefully tonight I'm going to try to tread on very shaky ground. I want to sort of try to understand very briefly, but look at it and look at one aspect of the night that we can hopefully better appreciate this particular event, the 9th of Rabiul Awal. Because obviously with historical events as they are, history always doesn't, or the books rather of history, do not always paint a picture to us of what the reality is. In Islam, we have obviously many events, not even on Islam, let me even broaden the scope. In human history, we have a lot of events that we know have definitely happened. We know, for example, that certain world wars happened. We know that certain countries were invaded. We know specifics of many things, and certain things, only general ideas are known about them. That's the case with human history, at least. We know the fact that we don't know everything that happened in specific detail, but we have certain inklings of certain events that transpired. Islamic history is no different. We know general issues. We know, for example, that the Prophet was born in Mecca. Was he born on the 12th of Rabiul Awal or the 17th? Muslims differ. Even scholars of the Ahlul Bayt, alayhim as-salam, they also differ. We believe he was born, he lived a life, he died, but some of the specifics are not known. But that doesn't detract from his message. Karbala, for example, we know the day it happened. Nobody can doubt and say it didn't happen on the 10th of Muharram. Everybody knows what happened on that day. Is every specific event known? Every single event of who did what on the day of Ashura? Definitely not. And in fact, the Ahlul Bayt have told us that what we have in our books, what we have about Karbala in our books, is maybe 1/10 or 1/100th of what actually happened. There's actually hadith that tell us that were we to be told the actual scene of the day of Ashura, we would die out of grief just reading or hearing about the tragedy of Karbala. But we know that certain people were killed in certain ways. We can't deny that. All Muslims accept that. But every single specific action, we don't know. We are left to fill in the blanks. But that doesn't detract from the entire message again of Karbala. Tonight, 9th of Rabiul Awwal, is one of those nights where we might know some specifics of what happened, why it is called Eid al-Zahra, Farhat al-Zahra, Eid al-Shuja, all of these different names that are referred to within our community. We know the general precepts of gathering for celebration, but we might not know the specifics of what happened on that day. And in addition, even certain things that people speak about, they didn't happen. They maybe have been made up somewhere down the line of history. Because as we know, history has not always been in good favor. What we would be cherishing and accepting. But what we know and what we can fill in the blanks with, obviously, is what we as a community commemorate, whether on times of grief and sorrow or in times of happiness and celebration. And again, 9th of Rabiul Awwal is one of these nights. So what really happened on this day? There are a few events that we are told that may have happened. I don't want to go over and analyze each and every single one because we would not have enough time. But just to give you some indications of what people speak about, and maybe what our response is on some of these levels. One of the things that you hear is that the second caliph was killed on this day. And that's why we as a community celebrate it. And maybe even people who have come from other countries, maybe this is what they recognize as being Eid al-Zahra. We don't know for sure. But looking at a majority of the books of history of the Muslim community, and even non-Muslim historians of Islam, we can safely say that he wasn't killed on the 9th of Rabiul Awwal. He wasn't even killed in the month of Rabiul Awwal, actually. It was months before this. So somewhere down the line, somebody put this within our understanding that this was the event. Now, you know, you may come across other scholars who debate this and differ on this, but a majority of our ulama, of our scholars, especially the historians, you'll see them saying that this is not why we celebrate Eid al-Zahra on the 9th of Rabiul Awwal. Maybe it was the killing of Umar ibn Sa'd. And we all know through the tragedy of Karbala that we just marked what role he had to play in the killing of Sayyid al-Shuhada. Nobody could sit there and defend this individual, even though he had close ties to the religion. His father was a great, prominent, well-known companion of Rasulullah, Sa'd ibn Abi Waqqas. He was a companion, he was with Rasulullah. But when you study history and what he did in Karbala, perhaps tonight is because of the fact that he was given justice in this world. For those who want to know, you can study about Mukhtar al-Thaqafi. Mukhtar, as we know, launched a massive revolution, a massive revolt after Karbala, about 5 or 6 years after the tragic events of Karbala. And his goal, literally, was to exact revenge in this world, temporal revenge, temporal justice on those who were guilty of what happened in Karbala. Unfortunately, there's not much written about him, but there was a very lengthy movie made in Iran a few years ago, about a 40-part miniseries about Mukhtar, from pre-Karbala to after what happened. And I would advise and recommend us all to watch that movie. Again, it's very long. It's about 40 parts, an hour per movie. But it gives you a good understanding of what was happening before Karbala. The actual event of Karbala is depicted in many scenes, and obviously the revolution of Mukhtar after that. So some scholars mention that there is a possibility that in this enaction of justice of Mukhtar, that he basically brought the heads of a few of the killers, at least two of them, Umar ibn Sa'd being one of them, to either the fourth Imam, Imam Zain al-Abidin alayhi salam, or to Muhammad al-Hanafiyya, the half-brother of Sayyid al-Shuhada. And so they say that because of this event, because of the happiness which was brought, not out of the fact of a killing of a person, but because people who are so guilty of crimes within Islam were brought to at least temporal justice in this world. Maybe that's why Eid al-Zahra is celebrated around the world tonight. The third point is that there's a hadith that you probably will be seeing on your social media networks. Just today I saw this hadith many times on Facebook. A lengthy hadith in Biharul Anwar and many other hadith books, which is known as the hadith of lifting of the pen. Literally what the hadith is talking about, and if you find the text and you go through the hadith, you'll see what it means. But in a nutshell, the hadith talks about that there is this tradition, again, it's up for debate, obviously, and it's very weak according to our scholars, that the 9th of Rabiul Awwal is such a momentous day that literally Allah tells the angels, don't write the sins of any of the Shia. Whatever they want to do, whatever sin they want to do, that they're free to do it. Now, again, I'm not saying that this hadith is authentic, because when you think about it, logically, it doesn't make sense. Why would Allah, or how can Allah say that I'm giving you one day to sin as much as you want, and there's no record, no worries, just do whatever you want. It baffles the logic of the mind. Why would an imam say that? Why would an ma'soom, who's there to guide us to Allah, which means to keep away from sin, why would a ma'soom say, I'm giving you carte blanche permission to sin as you want on the 9th of Rabiul Awwal, or 3 days, 9th, 10th, and 11th, as the tradition says, or as it purports to say. So this also, our scholars haven't, you know, analyzed this hadith from the point of view of the chain of narrators, and even the content itself, it doesn't fit with Islam, that Allah would ever allow you and I a free day to sin as we wish. So again, you will probably see this hadith in your social media feeds. Take it with a grain of salt, as you should take anything on social media with a grain of salt. Just because it's on Twitter, it doesn't mean it really happened. Just because somebody puts it on Facebook or Instagram, you know, think twice about it. Don't just hit forward and share it with all your friends because, wow, there's a hadith from the imams and they said something. No, there's a lot of things which we know are said in the name of the Prophet, in the name of the imams, in the name of Allah. And you, when you go to the source, you see, well, doesn't even exist. So that's one of the things that we have been told purported to happen on the 9th of Rabiul Awwal. But again, we scratch that out. That leaves literally one last thing. And this is what all of them, or many of the Marajah speak about. Many of our senior scholars say that most definitely, or most probability, is that this is the time where the transfer of imamate happens, because last night we marked the shahadat of the 11th imam. He died in the morning. So on the 9th of Rabiul Awwal, on the 8th rather of Rabiul Awwal, is when the imam was actually killed, early in the morning on the 8th. So if you want to think about it, the first day of imamate of the 12th imam was the 8th of Rabiul Awwal. It wasn't the 9th. So even people that say 9th of Rabiul Awwal is the first day of the imamate of the 12th imam, their math is a bit messed up, because the imam, the 12th imam, takes over immediately after the death of the preceding imam. So the 11th imam, if he dies at, let's say, 5:35, immediately when his soul leaves the body, the 12th imam or the next imam takes over. So we could say that we celebrate 9th of Rabiul Awwal because it becomes that transition of power. The 8th imam, or the 11th imam, loses his life. The imam transfers over, the 12th imam is busy with the ghusl, the burial of his father. And now on the 9th of Rabiul Awwal, it is maybe a time for us to realize and reflect on this transition of power. And it becomes important for us because the 12th imam is not ordinary. He is extraordinary. His imamah didn't last for 5 years like Amir al-Mu'mineen. It didn't last like 6 years like the 11th imam. His imamate has lasted from the point of time of the death of the 11th imam until today, which is 1,200 or almost 1,200 years. And it continues until Allah brings him back for society. And it will continue until he is killed. And so his imamate is unique. His life is obviously unique. And us as his followers, we also become unique because none of the other imams had this opportunity to govern for such a period of time, the ability to actually have people being trained during their absence from a community. Right? Imam Ali had 4 years, 5 years for his people to become who they were to support him. But we actually are, in a way, we can say we're blessed to have the imam in occultation because that means that we have been given extra time to prepare ourselves and our families for the return of Imam al-Mahdi, ajjalallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif. Before I go to that main theme for tonight, one of the things that we have to realize is that these last 68 days, again, that we were gathering, and we've heard, I'm sure, many people speak, whether it was live or you streamed majalis online from different parts of the world of different scholars, is that we have to hopefully go through this circle that I have on the screen, that this was a time not just of coming to be entertained, of, you know, spending some time, but rather that this should have been quality time to take in some knowledge that we were getting from scholars of various calibers who were coming or that we were tapping into. But the knowledge, as we looked at last night, the knowledge is not the goal of Islam. Our goal as Muslims is not just to gain knowledge. Because if it's just about knowledge, then Google is the greatest of Muslims. Google knows everything, or apparently everything, although I've Googled some stuff and I never got an answer. So Google doesn't know all of it. But Google knows a lot. And that's where we see that Islam is knowledge and practice. So whatever we learned, whatever I learned, whatever all of you learned in Muharram and Safar, all of that knowledge should culminate in our practical change in our lives. Imam Hussein alayhi salam didn't die on the day of Ashura just for you and I to come and beat our chest for 68 days. And then the next day we go back to normal, status quo, right? No change in our lives. Right? It didn't come and launch a revolution just so our halls could be draped in black for 68 days and then we take the cloth off. No, the revolution was for us. As he said, that I'm bringing this revolution to seek reformation in the nation of my grandfather. Right? And if that nation was corrupt, that they were ready to kill the imam of their time, then what about you and I? We have an imam of our time. Right? He's not here. But if we're not prepared when he comes, would we be like the people of Kufa with Imam Hussein, what they did to him? We have to ask ourselves the question that if Ahlul Kufa, the people of Kufa, betrayed Imam Hussein, when the 12th Imam comes, would we betray him just like his grandson was, or his grandfather rather, was betrayed on the day of Ashura? So that knowledge that we've taken in over these last 2 months, it has to result in our practical change in our lives. You know, ladies who weren't wearing hijab before Muharram, hopefully something in Bibi Zainab's story has touched them to put on the hijab. Men who didn't pray, who didn't want to, you know, be known as a Muslim, hopefully the message of Abul Fadl Abbas and Qasim and Imam Hussein and all of the people, hopefully their message, their speeches change us, that we become more practicing, the way we deal with ourselves, the way we deal with our family. And if that change didn't come, then we have to look at what went wrong within ourselves. And last but not least in this wheel is inspiration, that were we inspired to bring a change also in our society? This is again a part of the revolution of Imam Hussein. It wasn't just 72 people in the desert. It wasn't just about them. It was inspiring them, or them inspiring others to tread that same path, to make sure that change becomes, you know, a change begins within, but then it continues outside. And if we're able to complete that wheel, hopefully that will take us till next Muharram. We would gain knowledge, we would practice, be inspired, and the next Muharram comes along and we're ready to learn one or two new things, practice one or two new things, inspire somebody else about the message of Sayyidul Shuhada alayhi salatu wassalam. Salu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Going back to the main topic for tonight, I'll keep it very brief. But I want to reflect a bit about the 12th Imam, because if his authority, his guardianship over us, his permission that Allah has given after the death of his father begins that revolution, it puts into place Akhir al-Zaman, the latter days. It puts into effect the mission of 124,000 prophets. Then he has to be in the Quran. He has to be somewhere within the Quran, because we always want to go back to the Quran. And this is why I always stress on the Quran that we have to become intimate with the book of Allah. Not just month of Ramadan, 30 days, we read the Quran, we put it on the shelf, and then we wait another 11 months till the next Ramadan comes along, and then we read again. But we should be constantly in touch with the Quran. Scholars have written books about the 12th Imam in the Quran. The late Sayyid Yusuf Bahrani has a very beautiful book, Al-Qa'im Fil Quran. It's available in English now as well, a beautiful translation, where he looks at all of the verses of the Quran that he could gather, and maybe there are more. He hasn't done, obviously, you know, he's done it in his own scope. But he looks at the ayat of the Quran, which interpreted by the Ahlul Bayt about the 12th Imam, about Imam Mahdi, alayhi salam, in the Quran. Let me just share with us one of those verses to show us the Imam in the Quran and how the Ahlul Bayt interpreted it. When the sixth Imam would recite this beautiful verse of the Quran, which we all recite in Surah Baqarah, after Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, Alif Lam Mim, Dhalikal Kitabu La Rayba Fi Hudallil Muttaqeen. That is the book in which there is no doubt. It is a guidance to the Muttaqeen. Alladhina Yu'minuna Bil Ghayb. Those Muttaqeen, the pious, are who? One of their traits is that they have belief in the unseen. When the sixth Imam would read this verse, he would say the ones with taqwa, the muttaqoon, are the Shia of Ali. Inshallah, that means all of us here tonight, we are the ones of taqwa. We are the Shias of Ali, inshallah. And those who believe in the ghaib, what does the ghaib mean? Yes, Allah is the ghaib. We believe in Allah. The angels are in the ghaib. We believe in the angels. But he says that the ghaib is al-hujjatul ghaib, the hidden representative, the hidden source of Allah, the hidden master that Allah has put over humanity. So the 12th Imam is in the Quran. He doesn't come in name. Allah doesn't say Al-Mahdi, for example, the 12th Imam. But there are enough indicators for those who have spiritual eyes to read and reflect and understand from Ali Muhammad where the 12th Imam is. And when we understand where he is in the Quran, when we understand his place in the Quran, the question then comes is, where am I in relation to my 12th Imam? Where am I on this Eid al-Zahra with my 12th Imam? The relationship between us and the Imam is obviously something which is much more than I can talk about tonight. But just to mention a few things, the Imam is known with many different titles. One of them is Al-Muntazir. Al-Muntazir is one who is waiting. We are waiting for the Imam. He is Al-Muntazir. He is the one who is being awaited. But in between those, not only is he awaited, he is also waiting. So our scholars tell us the names of the Imam, his titles, he is Al-Muntazir and he is Al-Muntazir. He is waiting, but he's also being waited for. By who? By us, by the followers who claim loyalty to the family of the Prophet. But between those, between us waiting and him waiting for us, we have the state that we're currently in, intidhar. Intidhar is an Arabic word, obviously. It means active anticipation, not just sitting back and relaxing and saying, oh, he's going to come sometime. You know, when he comes and then inshallah, we'll see what happens. You know, we'll wait for that day and then we'll figure out what we have to do. Intidhar, literally, the way the verb is built, the way this word is built in Arabic, it's an active form. It's you're doing something to await the Imam. You know, if the majlis of tonight, as an example, if the organizers were going to say, well, you know, we're going to have some people coming tonight, but you know what, we'll wait till a few people come, then we'll unlock the door. And then when they come in the hall, then we'll turn the lights on. And then, you know, we'll do this and we'll do that. We'll say, well, you weren't very good hosts, were you? Because you expected people to come. You knew people would be here on this important night. Why didn't you prepare beforehand? The same thing about our imam, right? We know he's going to come. It's not if he comes, it's when he comes, right? We know he's going to do certain things. We know he needs certain people in his army. Women have to be there. 50 women will be in the first rank of the imam. 313 people, 50 are women. The rest are men. We know he needs certain people in certain sections of society. Why are we not preparing to be of those 313 or the 30,000 or the 70,000 that will be helping him? So that current state that we're in of intidhar, anticipation, can either be passive, we just relax, we have our chai, we watch our Netflix, we look at some tweets, or we actually begin to actively begin to work for the return of our imam. This is a very beautiful quotation I want to share with us from one of the Maraja Taqlid, one of our grand scholars, Ayatollah Safi Gulpegani. He's a contemporary in Iran. He's also the foremost authority on issues about the 12th imam. He's written at least, that I know of, 18 books about the 12th imam alone. One of them is a three-volume encyclopedia called Muntakhab al-Athar, where he's taken all of the hadith from the Shia and the Sunni and put them into an encyclopedia about the 12th imam. And fortunately, that translation is also available in English. This is a quotation from one of his books where he defines intidhar, active anticipation. He says that active anticipation is a state of existence for the human being, which is comprised of true faith and firm belief in the sources of legislation of the faith of Islam, the Quran and the Sunnah of the Prophet and the Aimma, the Imams, and in the Walayat of Imam al-Zaman. So he's saying that intidhar is a state of existence that we have to be in. Now, how does he define that? It is a spirit of zeal and a keen desire for the advent, the governance, and the dreams of living alongside the Ahlul Bayt. It is the detestation, the hatred of the current state that we find ourselves in which we see imperfection, corruption, perversion, and deterioration of the world around us. Right? None of us, I'm sure, can ever open up the news on TV or the internet and see what's happening in Burma, in Afghanistan, in Pakistan, in Syria, in Iraq, and even here in North America, of women having their hijab ripped off. What happened even the other day in Edmonton on the LRT station of those two young ladies and that man who verbally assaulted them and really, you know, threatened them with death with that noose. Right? We can't see all of these things and feel or be oblivious to the world that we live in. Right, we don't live in a nice world today, unfortunately. Although Canada is one of the best countries in the world, we have very few acts of, you know, extremism and violence, especially against minorities, but we still see many people suffering, not just Muslims. Our First Nations brothers and sisters are suffering. You go downtown, I'm sure there's people who are sleeping on cold cement tonight while we have a warm bed. While we have food at home, there are homeless people who don't have food tonight. So it's not just about you and I as Muslims, it's humanity who are suffering. Ayatollah Safi then says at the end, the state of affairs, both are being separated from our imam, and the corruption of the day and the age in which we are living, that this burns deep down inside us, and it aspires us to struggle for a better society. Right? This is intidhar. It's not sitting back and drinking chai, and having some kebabs, and asking Allah to hasten the imam. It's to go out there and make a change, right? I see that our youth are, for example, helping on the Boyle Street, feeding the homeless, clothing them. You know, all of these things that we're doing, these are little things, but they're big, to help their imams return. Because these are the little things that the imam will actually take on a much grander scale, right? We feed 10 people today, the imam may feed 10,000 when he comes. We help one person today. He'll help maybe a million people. And never think that today, well, they're not Muslims. Why should I help them? No, and I've mentioned this hadith before, that when the imam returns, hadith says that those who are worshippers of Allah will turn into idol worshippers when the imam returns. And those who worshipped idols will become Muslims when the imam returns. So we should never underestimate or say, well, this person, they're not a Muslim, why should I help them? No, they are human beings. As Imam Ali says, people are two types, either your brothers in faith or your equals in creation. So deal with them accordingly. Salu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Let me end by going through a few hadith of the importance of the time that we live in today. Again, we're in the occultation of our imam. We're awaiting the imam. We are praying for his deliverance, for our deliverance. How do the hadith portray this waiting period that we're currently engaged in? The first hadith we have from Rasulullah, where he tells us, "Afdalul ibadah intidharul faraj." The best form of worship is this actively awaiting the relief or the assistance. Faraj is, again, a very unique word in Arabic. It has multiple definitions. But one of them, or few that fit with our discussion and the context of the hadith, is that faraj can mean relief. So after difficulty is ease, as the Quran even tells us. But faraj can also mean assistance. So when we say that we're praying for the speedy faraj of the imam, ta'jilul faraj, as they say in the hadith, we're praying for a speedy return, assistance of the imam. So the Prophet says that this becomes the best form of worship. The best form of ibadat is to make dua to Allah for the deliverance of this relief from Allah. But how do we do it? Again, it's not only supplication. I mentioned it as, you know, a practical application, but we also have to realize that there is a key component in our lives, which is Allah. We can do whatever we want physically, but if Allah does not want something to happen, it won't happen. Right? You've seen people, maybe you face it in your own life. Everything lines up. You know, you apply for a job, you have every quality, every study, every, you know, degree that you've got everything in place. You think that you're going to breeze through the interview. Everything is looking like it's, you know, you're going to get the job. And then you get that call that, sorry, you know, we found somebody else. Was it just a fluke? Was it just, it randomly happened? No, there is some divine hand at play even within that. So we always have to realize Allah, we can plan, but Allah is the best of planners. And even if we try our best, sometimes Allah will say, you know what, that's not good for you. You might want it, as Allah says, sometimes we love something, but it's not good for us. And sometimes we don't like something, but you know what Allah says? It's a bitter pill to swallow, but you'll like it at the end. It may be difficult, but Allah says, you know what? At the end, you'll realize why I changed your fate to be so and so. So the 12th Imam, in a letter he wrote, the Imam had four direct representatives during the ghaybah, during the occultation. The second deputy of the 12th Imam, he was in direct touch with the imam, writing letters, talking, going back and forth. This is a part of the letter that the 12th imam writes to his deputy. He says to Muhammad ibn Uthman, وَأَكْثِرُوا الدُّعَى بِتَعْجِيلَ الْفَرَجِ فَإِنَّ ذَلِكَ فَرَجُكُمْ. Make abundant supplication for the hastening of the relief of the faraj, because in this is a hastening for your relief. So when we look at the world that we're in today, all of those things I talked about, the only way that we as humanity really, because we've gone on a complete tangent, the world today. You see how people can easily take the life of another human being. How people can steal the life savings of people who have worked their whole life. And in a minute, the money is gone out of the bank. All of these problems we see in the world, the 12th Imam says, make dua for me to come back quicker, because if I come back quicker, your problems are solved. Right? Because we as humans can't probably solve these problems on our own. And so the Imam says, you know what, make dua that I come, and I come quick, because then your relief is there. Because we can't rely on politicians, We can't rely on anybody except Allah and those whom He has sent to relieve us of the challenges that we face today. Last but not least, one of the short du'as that we have been taught, this one comes to us from our sixth imam. A man comes to the sixth imam and says, give me some du'a, teach me something I can pray. In those latter days of difficulties, of tribulation, of confusion, of anarchy in society, what can I do? What du'a can I read to fix me, keep me on the straight path? And the sixth imam gives him this short du'a. Allahumma arifni nafsaka. فَإِنَّكَ إِنْ لَمْ تُعَرِفْنِ نَفْسَكَ لَمْ أَعْرِفْ نَبِيَكَ. Oh Allah, allow me to know you. Because if I don't know you, Allah, I'm not going to know my prophet, your prophet. Allahumma arifni rasulak. فَإِنَّكَ إِنْ لَمْ تُعَرِفْنِ رَسُولَكَ لَمْ أَعْرِفْ حُجَّتَكَ. Oh Allah, allow me to know your messenger. Because if I don't know your messenger, I'm not going to know your representative. Allahumma arifni hujjatak. فَإِنَّكَ إِنْ لَمْ تُعَرِفْنِ حُجَّتَكَ ظَلَلْتُ أَنْدِينِ. Oh Allah, allow me to know your hujjah, your proof on the earth. Because if I don't know him, I'm going to go astray in my religion. You see how the sixth imam ties all of it together. Allah has to be known. If we don't know Allah, we don't know anything. If we don't know Allah, we can't know the Prophet. If we don't know the Prophet, we can't know the imam. We don't know the imam, we've gone astray in our religion. Right? So it's not only reading the dua, it's obviously action. We have to make a conscientious effort to know, to learn, to open a book, to read, to listen to scholars who can talk about these things and teach us. But it's a chain that we have to follow. And if we don't, then as the sixth imam says, if we don't know our Creator, we don't know our Imam, we don't know our Prophet, we've gone astray in our religion. And if we've gone astray in our religion, then obviously our world to come is not going to be what we envision it to be. We close on this beautiful night of Eid al-Zahra as we mark the beginning of the appointment of our 12th Imam to the Savior, to be the one who would save all of us and save all of humanity. We ask Allah as we close to again accept our ibadat, our majalis, our tears that we had shed during the month of Muharram and Safar. We ask Allah to allow those tears that we had shed to be the fire, to be the water that cools the fire of hell. We ask Allah to allow the Ahlul Bayt alayhum as-salam to intercede for us, that just as we shed tears and we ask Lady Zahra alayhi as-salam for her consolation of what happened to her son, we ask Allah to allow her and her children and her father and her husband to intercede for us on the day of resurrection. We ask Allah to give each and every one of us, our spouses, our children, our parents, our elders, the ability to witness another month of Muharram, that we can gather again to lament over Sayyid al-Shuhada. We ask Allah to forgive us our sins, to keep us all on the path of Muhammad and Ali Muhammad. And we ask Allah that He keeps all of us on that path, and that we can live to see the advent, the dhuhur of our 12th Imam, and that we can be amongst those to help and assist the Imam when he brings forth a revolution of change to remove all of the evil, oppression, and tyranny within society. Rabbana taqabbal minna innaka anta as-sami'ul alim. Let us close by remembering all of the marhumin, the deceased, from our families, our friends, the ulama who have left this world, the shuhada who have given their lives and their blood for the sake of Islam, with one surah al-Fatiha. But before that, one loud salawat upon Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.